me. That's a tough guy. How was that? Does that make you feel good?
No, Chris. Get out of here. I bought you. I paid you $25, jerk.
Why are you always yelling at me?
Because I can, you moron. Get out of here. Damn it. I paid that guy $25. He told me he could do a damn disclaimer. So this is Modest Joint, and yeah, I do use some vulgar language. You know, one of these days I'm going to find somebody to come in here and do my disclaimer, and they're going to do it the right way. Okay, I'm really sorry. I'm really excited. I got Tommy Fierro coming on the show here. He's not here yet. I got the limo. It went and picked him up from the airport. His flight is in. I have talked to him. He will be here momentarily. So I'm really excited about that. Great personal expense. I did fly Tommy Fierro in. Also, next week, my very best friend in the whole world, Frank Murdoch, will be here, and he'll be sharing some stories about training with Buzz Sawyer and traveling on the road with Manny Fernandez. This week, we've also got my top 10. This week's top 10 is top 10 ways to get hit by me with a steel folding chair. If you got questions or comments, I'd love it for you to email me. Email me at michael.modest@gmail.com. Hey, this November 8th, I'm at Pro Wrestling Revolution, Mount Pleasant High School in San Jose. Make sure you get out there and check me out. Also, you can catch me on Michael Porter's wrestle shoot on November 16th. So that's pretty much what I got coming up. I'm going to do my top 10, and then by then I'm really praying Tommy, the limo driver, I paid the guy an extra $100 to get him here on time. So I don't know what's going on. But here's my top 10. This is the top 10 ways to get hit in the head by Michael Modest with a steel folding chair. Number 10, hit me with a steel folding chair. Number 9, say wrestling is fake and see if I don't hit you with a steel folding chair. Number 8, take a shit in the locker room. You know, it's a proven scientific fact that if you can smell shit, the reason why is because there's tiny microscopic particles of shit floating through the air. So when you take a shit in the locker room, green guys, what you don't understand is that your shit particles are landing on my wrestling bag. That pisses me off. Don't take a shit in the locker room. Number 7, drink my coffee. I will definitely hit you with a chair. Number 6, tell me the wrestlers that inspired you to become a wrestler are Giant Silva, Ultimate Warrior, Ludwig Borga. Number 5 way to get hit in the head with a steel folding chair by Michael Modest, the number 5 way is stiff me on a payoff. Number 4, drink my last beer. Number 3, chop me on my back. You know, I don't go for that shit. You know, you can chop me on the chest all freaking day long, chop me till I bleed, but don't hit me on the back. It pisses me off. The number 2 way to get hit in the head by Michael Modest with a steel folding chair is squirt me in the eye with a squirt gun when I'm wrestling. Now, that's a big, long story, and I'm probably going to talk to Tommy about that. It's kind of interesting. And the number 1 way to get hit in the head with a steel folding chair by yours truly, Michael Modest, jerk off in my bed. You jerk off in my bed, you're watching pornos, you're going to get hit, period. And that's another true story. That actually happened to me. A student, I found out a student was caught jerking off in my bed watching my porn. That pissed me off. All right, so now I've got my top 10, and good news, I just heard the door. Hold on 1 second. I think he's here. Hey, Tommy, come on in here, man. How you doing, brother?
Hey, bro, what's going on, man? Thanks for having me. Oh, wow, this fucking place is nice, man.
Hey, man, it's my joint. It's Modest Joint. Come on in here.
Oh, this is nice, dude. I like this a lot.
Here, let me get the chair ready for you. There you go, brother.
Nice, dude. Thank you.
Hey, man, it's really good to have you here, Tommy. I've been having so much fun doing this show. And, it's like very therapeutic for me.
Yeah, man, I enjoy listening to your shows a lot, man. And
you know, I think before I started doing your show, I think I was at least 50% insane. And I think by doing the show, I've actually, decreased that by about 25%. I'm probably only 25% insane now. So it's really miraculous what you've done with this show, man.
Oh, man, and it's great to have you, man. And I first couple of things, I listened to them and I enjoyed them, and then out of nowhere, it just like clicked on me, like just how damn entertaining you are. And I started thinking about it, and I know I told you this, we were just talking on the phone, But you know, one of the things that are missing in the wrestling business is, like, back in the day in the 80s, you had Piper's Pit, you had the barber shop, you had the flower shop, you had all these gimmick segments. And it really helped, like, to get characters over back then. And today that's missing. Like, once in a while, Chris Jericho would do something or Carlito would do something, but it's not the same like it was back then when you had the props and the setups for it. And I just pictured, I envisioned Michael Modest's joint as a modern-day version type of Piper's Pit. And I thought it would be really cool, and it's never been done before, and because the Internet now is, like, the big thing in wrestling now. Back in the day, there was no Internet. But now everything revolves around the Internet. So I thought, how cool would it be to have a modern-day version of Piper's Pit on the Internet? It's never been done before, and that's what I feel like this show is, like a modern-day version of Piper's Pit on the Internet, and obviously a part of Who's Slamming Who. So I'm happy to be the first guest here on Modest's joint, man.
Oh, man, I'm so excited to have you, brother, really. You know, it's true what you were talking about. I was just reading an old article that you had written for the Wrestling Herald, and you were talking about how the characters are missing. Now, you know, it's funny. I was surfing the net the other day, and I ran across this kid, and he has like a bear gimmick, right? And but he wears wrestling tights, okay? And they have like claw marks on them, and a bear on the back, you know, a bear head and shit. But he wrestles, you know, he does a bear hug, he does a lot of claw holds and things like that. And I told him, I said, you know, brother, I said, that's brilliant because it sets you aside from the next fucking dude.
Yeah.
It sets you aside from the John Smith, the John whatever the fuck. I mean, everybody comes up with these very normal names. You know, my name, Mike Modest, was actually given to me by the boys. I never even came up with that gimmick name. It was a name that the boys started saying, oh, he's so modest, and before long, it just stuck. Everybody would be like, hey, Modest.
Yeah.
You know, and it just stuck. But a lot of guys, they come up with these very normal-type things, and you look on TV, and a lot of them are just kind of running through the motions, and they all blend in together.
Yeah.
You don't have jobbers anymore, so you don't know who to pay attention to. When you're watching, like, a six-man match, Jesus,
yeah.
you're watching six potential superstars, and you really don't know what to concentrate on. And you're right, the characters are missing. I was never a fan of the characters where, like, they actually tried to become the thing. Like, there was a time when Undertaker was being pushed like he really was a dead guy.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that. But I always liked the Undertaker gimmick, you know, that he did a tombstone pile driver. He dressed a certain way. He had a certain type of style, kind of a slow, methodical style. And I liked all of that about the gimmick. But I don't like when people try to actually take it to the next level. And, you know, like if you call yourself Bearcat Wright, you know, you don't have to come out dressed as a bear. You know, it just means that those are the kind of things that you do. You do things that maybe are a fighting style that would be in common with a bear. You know? But I do, man. I miss the characters. Jake the Snake Roberts.
I was just about to say that. Back in the day, like in the 80s in the WWF, everyone was a character. You had Jake the Snake Roberts. You had Rick the Model Martel. And, you know, everyone that was on TV had a certain character. And that's what's missing today from the WWE product is that there are no characters. Why do you think Santino Marella is so over for? Because he's a character. He stands out. He's different than everybody else, you know?
Right. He doesn't just blend in, you know?
Yeah.
And that was the thing. It's like back in the day, they used to come up with some gimmicks that I just hated. You know, some gimmicks were horrible. But you look at the Million Dollar Man. I mean, there's a gimmick that's based on everybody's boss.
Yeah.
Everybody has to go to work every day and eat crow with their boss or their you know, somebody that's wealthy. You know, they're debtor for their home loan or whatever it is. You're running into wealthy people every day, and you're not able to just holler at them.
Million Dollar Man,
how therapeutic for wrestling fans to be able to come and yell at this rich guy.
Yeah, let me ask you a quick question. I just want to get your opinion on this. Now Ted DiBiase's son is in there, and he just has a pair of trunks, and he has no gimmick. You think that's something that they dropped the ball on? He should have came in as the new Million Dollar Man. He's the Million Dollar Man's son, you know?
The spoiled rich kid.
Yeah.
Right.
They don't even mention that.
Right. He could have totally been the spoiled rich kid and been a spinoff of Shane McMahon. And
yeah.
Shane McMahon's actually a really cool motherfucker. But you know, but I mean, let's face it, he was born into a good situation, you
yeah.
know, and so DiBiase's kid could be the same way. And I mean, it doesn't make him an automatic heel. I mean, you could go any way with that, you know.
Yeah.
You could see that, yeah, you know, my dad was rich and he was an asshole and ignored me and traveled all the time, and you know, I'm exact opposite, you know. But yeah, I mean, play off of it, you know, put it into his gimmick.
Yeah, that's something that's definitely missing today from the WWE product is the characters. You know, back then there were so many of them. Now there's only a couple, you know.
Right.
But that's what makes someone like Santino Marella stand out. That's why he's so over, you know.
But see, one of the other things, like, this is one of the other problems I have with the characters. One of the other problems I have with the characters is when they go too far off of a person's real personality.
Yeah.
And they try to make it acting. You know, because most guys that get into professional wrestling are not necessarily great actors. Even if they can cut a promo, it may not translate onto the screen or the stage, you know?
Yeah.
But they have a lot of guys that, even with their normal generic gimmick, you know, they're just a regular name and they wear trunks, even with that, there's still no personality that's true and genuine. And that's one of the things I miss about professional wrestling. Roddy
yeah.
Piper really was that way. Outside of the ring, there was a personality trait in him that was Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at all the really talented guys in this business, another guy that was that way was Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. You know, Mr. Wonderful, when his temper flared in the ring and you saw that really angry person come out, you know, that guy is legendary in the fucking locker rooms.
Yeah.
That temper was real, you know, and so it was like guys were just more of what they were. I mean, Piper didn't act that way when he would go pay his PG&E bill, you know, or
yeah.
grocery shopping, but that was a real, you know, distinguishing character, you know, a trait of Piper's.
Let me ask you a question. You're bringing up all these old names, and this is something that I think another thing is missing from the wrestling business, and I'm sure that you'll agree with me, is the lost art of the old-school heel manager. Back in the day, you had Bobby the Brain Heenan, you had Mr. Fuji, you had Jimmy Hart, you had all these guys getting, you know, the guys over, you know, and, like, that's something that's missing today. I don't understand why they don't bring back the old-school manager. The guys like Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. Bro, you put Paul Orndorff in a suit with sunglasses and he comes out and he's an arrogant heel, and he can pass along that Mr. Wonderful gimmick to someone else. Let's say just like Shelton Benjamin, for example. He can give Shelton Benjamin his robe and be his manager, because let's face it, Shelton Benjamin ain't the greatest interview guy in the world. But if you put Paul Orndorff with him, he's a phenomenal fucking talent, and Paul Orndorff can get him over with his promos, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he could be Mr. Wonderful Shelton Benjamin, managed by Paul Orndorff, you know?
Right.
I just think that's something that's missing from the business is the art of the old school manager. I just want to get your opinion on that.
Well, again, you know, it's like most of the time when I see managers nowadays, I thank God that they're not on the screen.
Yeah.
And again, the reason why is because they're actors. They're guys that got into this business knowing it was a work, and so they've always approached it with that mentality. They become their actors, and they put so much importance on their portrayal or their acting performance, you know, that they don't allow themselves to be real. And that's what was great. Like, I was amazed when I met some of the guys, like, backstage. I was amazed at their actual personalities. Bobby the Brain Heenan is very much like his ring persona.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just his ring persona is magnified by 100 times.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, I think that's the thing that's really missing, is guys that really live this business, really are this business, and bring that realism over into a character.
Yeah. Ace Dolan mentioned this in his segment last week, and he made a good point talking about the lost art of heel managers. He said that it can never be brought back, because nowadays everyone knows that wrestling is a work, like all the like with the internet and everything. You know, back in the day in the '80s, you didn't have the internet, you didn't have all the kayfabe out there, and you know, back then you really thought Bobby the Brain Heenan, you know, did all the paperwork and everything for King Kong Bundy. You thought Mr. Fuji did that stuff for Demolition. Nowadays, the business is so open back then. You think that's a reason, too, why managers are not around?
No, man, I don't.
I don't either. So I think they could be brought back. That's what Ace said. But I think that you could bring it back. Because, I mean, there's so many talented guys sitting home doing nothing like Paul Orndorff. Well, imagine Roddy Piper being a mouthpiece for someone, man. He would get the guy over like $1 million.
Right.
I just think that's something that's missing. I think they could definitely bring that back, you know?
And meanwhile, a guy like Piper, can you imagine all the shit he would teach somebody?
Here's
a guy, I watch Roddy Piper matches still to this day, man. I get on YouTube and I check out old Piper's pits and Roddy's matches. And the thing that always amazes me about Roddy Piper's fucking matches, he's not doing backflips. He's not doing springboard anythings. He really, really rarely does a fucking wrestling move.
Yeah.
But I'm entertained the entire time. And I'm drawn in to what he's doing the entire time. I know wrestling's a work to this now. You know, obviously, I've been doing it for fucking, you know, almost 20 years. But I still get drawn in to really good wrestling matches. The problem is, when I watch pay-per-views nowadays or I watch TV nowadays with wrestling, I don't get drawn into that. I get drawn into the wrestling of yesteryear because there were more guys that were really just who they were, extensions of themselves, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, I think like what Ace was saying about the wrestling fans knowing it was work. Hey, man, you know what? I was a little Italian kid that grew up in a rough area in Richmond, California, okay? I was pretty close to Oakland, which is, you know, pretty legendary. I'm being a bad area.
Yeah.
When I grew up, I got into fights. And so when I would see, you know, pro wrestling on TV, believe me, I tried to whip somebody to the ropes before, and it didn't work in a real fight. Okay, and I knew better than to jump in the air and land on a guy with my leg and land on my ass on the cement. I knew that however hard that floor was, my leg would not do enough damage to his fucking chest or esophagus area to warrant the damage it would do on my tailbone. All right, so I knew at a very young age, I'm talking 5 or 6 years old, that what I was watching was a type of performance. However, I was also smart enough, which pisses me off nowadays when people aren't smart enough to, you know, to realize that what these guys are doing takes a lot of athleticism, takes a lot of skill, takes a lot of training, takes a lot of hard work, and it hurts.
Yeah.
I never, ever, growing up as a kid, I never remember watching professional wrestling and saying to myself, oh, shit, that must be easy.
Yeah.
You know, that never happened. And yet, I think growing up, the entire time I knew it wasn't, you know, like boxing. You know, I knew it was different. I couldn't explain why I liked it so much, but I did. You know, and you know, so, and even in my teen years, you know, not all my friends were professional wrestling fans. A lot of them would be like, how can you watch that shit, Mike? And I'd be like, how can you not? You know, and even then people would say, well, you know, but that shit's all fake. Well, then you're not watching what I'm watching.
Yeah.
You know, because what I'm watching doesn't look all fake to me. You know, it definitely looks like an entertaining performance, but, you know, looks like definitely injuries could result. So I mean that's my outlook on it, man. Is I don't think truly wrestling fans, you know, by and large, ever believed the business was 100% shoot. I don't think that's what was important to them. I think the fantasy world was important to them, and I don't think that's created enough anymore. I watch some of the angles that are done, and I think 75% of the angles that are done on television nowadays are inside jokes amongst the boys, amongst the bookers in the office.
Oh, sure it is, man. Okay? Sure it is.
So they're booking. It's funny because what they really need to be doing is reaching out to non-wrestling fans. Instead, what they're doing is they're reaching out to the smart marks who are the hardcore wrestling fans who will always be there.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're the ones that love it so much they got to delve deep into the business and hear all the backstage shit and know, you know, what this guy's real name is and yada yada.
Yeah.
You know,
hey,
so,
man, I see you have a couple beers over there. You mind if I grab one or no?
No, brother, hey. Fuck. Help yourself, man.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
No problem, brother.
Thank you. So, what's up, man? What do you want to talk about today?
Well, you know, one thing I did want to talk about, dude, and I'm passing through here. Frank Murdoch. What's up, brother? Hey, I'm Pat. Frank's eating pizza for breakfast. You know, next week I was telling you, man, I'm going to have Frank on the show, and I'm, you know, I've heard all these stories before, the Buzz Sawyer stories, but Frank was actually there the day the kid was killed by Buzz Sawyer in the ring, the day the guy was killed.
He's going to talk about that next week?
Man, it's a phenomenal story, and
nice.
just Frank's whole view on Buzz Sawyer, you know, a lot of people didn't like Buzz. He had a really bad reputation, but, you know, his commercial that aired in Sacramento, it used to say, you know, wrestling's not easy, it's hard, but you'll come out a better man. And that was the way Buzz trained. Basically, Buzz's whole point was he wanted to make you quit within 3 or 4 months before he started liking you.
Yeah.
So he would literally, I mean, beat the crap. Anyways, I'm going to save all that for next week, man. Frank's got tons of good stories about
it. Cool, man. I'm looking forward to hearing that.
So, but one of the things I did want to talk about, brother, you're here, man, and I've actually been saving this to talk to you about, is the way they use big guys in the business nowadays.
I'd love to talk to you about that.
Brother, I watch how they use the Great Khali, you know, and I sit here and I think to myself, what the fuck are these people thinking? They spend all this money on this giant guy. He's like 6'7". He actually can work, but nobody wants to work with him because he's the inside joke in the locker room. He's a phenomenal talent. He's a phenomenal investment. But instead, they have him dancing around doing little comedy gimmicks. They have him wrestling Johnny Knoxville on television and at pay-per-views. Whatever happened to the day that you really pushed a big guy? When I trained that guy, me and Donovan trained Dalip from the start, the Great Khali. Right? After Donovan and I trained him, you know, when I started training him, I went ahead and I looked at old footage of guys like Big John Studd and Andre the Giant and even like Big Show, some of the current giants. I looked at some of the stuff that they did, the things I liked and the things I didn't like. You know, and I think that most people train giants incorrectly. They have them doing shit just because they can. They have them doing things that they shouldn't be. Like, for instance, an arm drag or a drop kick. You know, a giant, a guy that's standing 7'2", he drop kicks a guy that's 6'4". It makes him look unathletic.
Yeah.
You know, it even if he is an athlete. And it pisses me off, Tommy, that I'm sitting at home and there's guys out there making serious decisions in this business and no one seems to know how to get a giant over. No one seems to know how to take a guy that's 7'2", 425 pounds of solid muscle and get that guy over. I guarantee you put me in the ring with Dalip Singh, with the Great Khali, I guarantee you I know how to get a big guy over. And it's not by taking a bunch of crazy, insane bumps, because with a giant that size, he shouldn't have to do shit like that to beat me.
Yeah, man, I can't agree with you more, man. And that's the problem with how they book him. They have him coming out there dancing like an asshole. They have him doing that thing with Johnny Knoxville, which was complete embarrassment to the wrestling game.
And then what? And then they're going to try to put him in a serious match against Batista or something down the road.
Yeah, who's gonna take him seriously after seeing him do shit like that? Like, back in the day, man, like how they booked giants, like Andre the Giant, dude. Like, and here's another thing that someone touched upon last week on the show. They talked about how the Big Show used a steel chair last week to take out someone. Like, back in the day, you would never see Andre the Giant use a steel chair. Great
right.
Khali, what they should do is they should have him come out every week and destroy jobbers every week, bro. Real fucking quick. It's not a hard concept to follow. You have a 7-foot monster coming out, and you know what? The fans should be scared of him.
Brother. Let's go back to what you just said. You need to have him in there against a jobber, okay? Now, I don't care if that jobber is Matt Burns from Okie Doke, Oklahoma, or if that jobber is the Curry Man, who's a great, fantastic fucking wrestler. But the Curry Man getting squashed by a giant does no damage to him.
Yeah.
He's only 200 pounds. He's a high flyer. You put a guy like that in the ring with the giant, he should be the one using the freaking chair.
Yeah.
He should be using the chair to no avail, because the giant just no-sells it and walks towards him, picks him up, and tosses him somewhere.
Yeah, and let's talk about the Big Show for a second. Here, this past WrestleMania, you had the Big Show, who was another 7-foot monster, against a 165-pound boxer, and you have the boxer go over on the Big Show. Like, what's that do for the Big Show, and what's that do for the WWE when you have a 165-pound boxer beat your 500-pound giant, and then you're going to try and come back and push the Big Show in the main event? It just makes the wrestling business look like shit that a 500-pound monster couldn't even beat a boxer. It makes it look like the wrestling business is fake and boxing's real. It does nothing for...
Well, first of all, I got to ask you, what was Paul walking around on his knees? How'd the guy hit him in the fucking face?
Yeah.
You know, it's
so,
like...
So stupid.
You know, shit like that just drives me fucking crazy.
And another thing, booking big men back in the day, look at WrestleMania 1, for example. You had Andre the Giant against Big John Studd in a body slam challenge with the money on the line. Bro, nowadays, you have these giants getting slammed and suplexed and all kinds of moves like it was nothing. Bro, back then, if you body slammed Andre the Giant back in the day, bro, that was a big deal. That was a big deal if you could pick up the Big Giant and body slam him. Nowadays, people are doing it like it's nothing. It's just horrible, man.
Oh, man, yeah, it is like it's nothing. It's like this business has set out to take everybody and make them the same.
Yeah.
I saw a guy sent me a match to critique for him. He sends me this match. He's a pretty big dude. And he's trying to wrestle like Bret Hart, brother. He's about six foot nine. I mean, the guy's tall. I don't know how freaking tall he is, but he's a big motherfucker. He was wrestling this guy that was about 6'2", right? And they're exchanging hammer locks and top hand wrist locks and doing chain wrestling. And I'm like, brother, check it out. Next time, lock up with that guy, let him try the top hand wrist lock, and just toss him off of you.
Yeah.
There's no way that a guy like that should be doing chain wrestling, period.
You know, I agree with you, man.
Double shoulder tackles, even if he's wrestling a larger guy, you know, even if he's wrestling a guy his own size, they're going to be too clumsy to pull off any real good chain wrestling. You know, the two of them, you're better off. And it's not their strength. It's not what people want to see from big dudes. They want to see meat. They want to see flesh smacking into it. You know, they want to see the power. That's why that makes those guys special. What made the cruiserweight special was that they did the high flying. And what made the middleweight special was that they were mat men.
Yeah.
You know, and back in the day, that was kind of like the formula. You didn't have too many mat men trying to military press people and toss them outside the ring. Why? Because you had to save that for Lex Luger.
Yeah.
It was Lex's gimmick.
Yeah. Speaking of cruiserweights for a second, let's look at Rey Mysterio for example. Obviously, he's a huge cash cow for the WWE, one of their big stars. But what's that say for the Big Show when you have a 5'6", 175-pound guy going over on the Big Show? It just looks bad to me, man. It really does.
You know what? You know what, Tommy? Let's forget for a moment, okay, how it even looks. Let's just forget for a moment that it looks bad. All right, because Bruce Lee did beat Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in a fight in a kung fu movie. So let's say that little guys can beat big guys.
Yeah.
And I think every once in a great while, like they did with Sean Waltman back in the day, the 1-2-3 kid, when he beat Ramon in that real quick upset.
Yeah.
I think every once in a while, I think it's healthy.
Oh, absolutely. And the key word that you just said was upset.
Right.
Know?
Right, but now it seems to be kind of like the norm. It seems to be like, yeah, you know, big guys, hey, any day they can get beat by a little dude, you know. But let's forget how it even looks. Let's just talk about the investment. You invest that much money in a guy like Paul White, and then you use him in that way. What does that say for your investment?
Yeah.
What are you trying to do with the money that you're tossing out there for this giant and a guy that's special, and you're supposed to be trying to keep him from other companies? Because you let a guy like, hey, I'll tell you what, you let a guy like Paul Heyman get a hold of Big Show.
Oh, forget
about
it.
You let a guy like Paul Heyman start back up like an ECW, and you let him get a hold of the Big Show or Khali, and you see what Paul Heyman does. You see if Paul Heyman doesn't know what you do with a guy like that.
Oh, exactly. Look at, for example, what Paul Heyman did with 911. 911 was the shits, but you know what?
He was horrible.
He was over his shit because Paul Heyman knew how to book 911.
how to hide his weaknesses and show his strengths.
Absolutely.
There was a reason why Goldberg's matches were all fucking, you know, 15 seconds. It was because he couldn't wrestle longer than that.
Yeah. So he was one of the most over guys ever in wrestling business, though.
Right. I'm talking to my ex-wife's uncle one day, and the guy almost made me vomit. He was telling me, he goes, you know what wrestling's missing? And I was like, what? And, you know, I'm talking to a Mark, and I got to realize that kind of shit, you know?
Yeah.
And he says, you know what wrestling's really missing? And I said, what? And he goes, those really great wrestlers, like the Ultimate Warrior and Goldberg, the guys that could just come in there and dominate. And I thought to myself, at first, you know, that wrestler pride, that pride that, man, I really know my craft kind of came out.
Yeah.
And then I thought, wait a minute, those two guys really know their craft, too.
Yeah.
Because they also were smart enough to hide weaknesses and only show their strengths. Warrior was a phenomenal entertainer.
Oh, he was, man.
What an incredible talent he was to this business. He was the only guy that ever, to that point, rivaled the popularity of Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, this is another thing. I'm glad that you're talking about this, because we're talking about a bunch of different topics right now that no one else is ever hitting on. Let's take Ultimate Warrior, for example. I think that he totally doesn't get the credit he deserves for getting the business as hot as it was back in the late 80s. They came out with that DVD with him last year, or the year before, like, totally, like, bashing him and, like, making fun of him. Bro, these guys, like, they were on his DVD, like, putting him down, like, today. No, they weren't really putting him down, but they were kind of, like, making fun of him. Bro, I bet you any money, like, all these guys were huge fans of his when they were kids, you know? He did so much for this wrestling business. Like you said, he rivaled the popularity of Hulk Hogan. And I don't think he gets the credit he deserves for everything that he contributed to the wrestling business. Granted, money have been a locker room headache, yeah. Many have not done business the right way, yeah. But it doesn't matter, bro. He was still a huge, huge, huge asset for the WWF back in that time.
Well, you know, you still got to call it like it really is. You know, don't live in a fantasy world. You know, if you say that Ultimate Warrior wasn't huge in this business, if you say that he didn't rival Hulk Hogan's popularity, if you say those things, then you're just living in a fucking la-la land.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, dude. It was Hogan and Hogan and Warrior, WrestleMania 6. I remember when Warrior went over for the belt, bro. I was so excited. I ran up and down my street screaming, Ultimate Warrior is the new champion. I was so excited. I just don't see how he doesn't get the credit that he deserves.
And then you flash over to me on the West Coast, brother, and I was fucking really disappointed. Man, I was so sick to my stomach because, and here's the reason, okay? A lot of people, and especially, I'm not saying like in the business, like most of the boys listening to this, they'll know this, but a lot of people don't understand that Hulk Hogan's a hell of a wrestler.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man.
Back in the day, when he was in Japan, he had some stellar matches with guys like Stan Hansen, you know, that were just legendary-type matches. I mean, he had some incredible matches over there in Japan.
Yeah.
And so, like, to me, I'd seen where Warrior came from. I knew he used to be the Dingo Warrior, and I knew the type of wrestler he was, and I just didn't appreciate it as much as I appreciated a guy like Hogan, who could do a lot more, but held back, only gave the fans what they needed. Everything Hogan did in his matches, people could remember.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, and that's one of the things that like I take into my matches nowadays. I got into the ring, Sunday. I was in the ring up in Sacramento wrestling for a company called SPW. I wrestled this kid named Adam Thornstow, and if you haven't seen this guy, I'm not even sure if he's on YouTube or not, but this kid is phenomenal. He's got the punk rock gimmick like Shannon Moore, and I'll tell you what, him and Shannon Moore would be such a phenomenal tag team. It makes me sick to even think about, you know, if I had the money and I could put on my own wrestling promotion. I mean, the things that I would do, man, it'd fucking, you know, it'd be good. But, this guy, I wrestled this guy, and I ended up having to wrestle, like, you know, almost as soon as I got there, I was throwing on my boots and stuff, and guy came up to me. We had no time to talk. We went in the ring. We did our thing, and the only thing we called was I said, hey, you know, make your comeback and do the frog splash. I'll move, and I'll give you an Oklahoma, you know, and he was like, cool, no problem. So we did the whole fucking match, brother, and it was great. And I did probably about 4 offensive maneuvers. Each one of them, besides chopping meat, You know, I lay in my forearms. I don't stomp on punches and shit. I don't waste my punches. Every once in a while, I throw one, and they're nice. You know, and the fans really pop off it because I don't do it often.
Yeah.
Throw mostly forearms, chops, uppercuts with, you know, the European uppercut, forearm. I do things like that, and so even that, those things, because they're physical, always get pops and entertain the people. But I place my moves. I don't piss them all away. I put them in spots in the match where it's going to make sense and it's going to maximize the effectiveness and the pop of the maneuver, you know. And I watch indie guys do it all the time. They'll take every finisher that's being used right now in the WWF. They'll take every one. They use them all as high spots, barely register, never sell them, and that's their match.
Yeah.
Like, do as much as you can, as quick as you can, and get your weekend warrior fix in.
Yeah, I'm on the phone, Ma.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I forgot to even tell the fans this. I swear to God, this is a true story. Tommy, okay, now you want to talk about a mama's boy. Tommy told me, he says, brother, listen, my mom really wants to come out to California.
She's dead, man. She's here.
Brother, could you use your miles? You know, you pay for one ticket, you know, you
I
get
had to fly her in, you know?
Right. So I bring his mom out, too, and now she's interrupting the show, but that's okay, Ma. You're good to go.
Mom, I'm actually on Modest's joint right now, and this is a pretty big deal for me, and I promise you that I'll eat all my dinner before I go to work today. Sorry. I really appreciate bringing her in, too, man. That was really nice of you, you know?
Oh, no problem, brother. You know, you got to do it.
I'm on with Mike. Please, can you just wait outside? I'm on with Michael Modest here. This guy's a big fucking star here. Making me look bad. Shit. Sorry.
No problem, brother. No problem, man. Well, hey, man. You know, a couple other things I want to talk about, and I know it'll be brief because but that HBO wrestling show. Now, what's the deal? Have you heard anything about this?
I heard a little bit about it, It's supposed to be. This is a thing that I'm surprised about is that it's not getting a bigger play than it is on the internet, considering like how everything in the wrestling business is on the internet. Is that I think something like this could be huge for the wrestling business because let's face it, man, HBO has produced some of the biggest shows out there today. The Sopranos, I'm a big mark for. It sucks that they're not around anymore. I mean, Entourage, Sex and the City. I mean, they've produced some really, really, really big shows, and I think this is a really good thing for the wrestling business because HBO produces these shows and they catch on so big and their cult followings, is that I think, first of all, I think anything outside of people doing stuff outside of WWE is a good thing for the wrestling business because it just gives more exposure to the wrestling business in general.
Right.
Now let's say this show catches on, for example, like The Sopranos or Entourage or Sex and the City. You watch any of those shows or no?
Yeah, man, I was huge on The Sopranos, brother.
Yeah. So, I mean, these shows are huge, man. And if this show can catch on, half the way that Sopranos or Entourage or Sex and the City catched on, I mean, this can open up an avenue for the wrestling business to get it hot again because, and the thing with this show is that they're doing it from it's like the 1970s. The scene of the movies would be from the 1970s. And it's going to be like an old school wrestling family. I think it's like a promoter or something they're going to do, but it's a pretty cool era because, you know, that really hasn't been brought up in the current eye of wrestling fans of doing something from back in that day.
I'll tell you what, growing up as a kid, that was my time. You know, that was what I was watching was 70s
yeah.
pro wrestling, and I was a big fan of on Channel 2. Here in the Bay Area, they had Roy Shire's promotion, Big Time Wrestling.
Yeah.
And I was a huge fan of guys like Ray Stevens and Lonnie Main and Rocky Johnson. And we got all – what was great is San Francisco was like a stopover from Japan.
Yeah.
So we ended up getting like all kinds of great talent that would be on their way to Japan. We'd get them on the stopover on the way back or, you know, going. You know, they'd come out a couple days early and stop in San Francisco, and so it was really cool. We always had guys coming in from other territories challenging for the belts and stuff, so it was really a neat Bay Area was a great place for wrestling back in the day, back in the 70s, and not so much into the early 80s. You know, early 80s, wrestling kind of died here. But man, I loved that shit. And I think the 70s, like you say, because kayfabe was so strong and because it was a very close-knit, it was a closed business. I mean, you really had to know somebody to get into this business. There were no wrestling schools. There were no, you know, places where you could just go and start training. You know, so it was a very closed business. So I think those are going to be. I think it's going to be a really interesting show. I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, it should be really cool. Can you do me a quick favor, man? My fucking mom's banging on your fucking door. Can you get someone to fucking clothesline her or something, man? Just get her out of the way for a little bit. It's really.
Right. Hold on one second, man. Let me take care of this. I'm going to get Frank Murdoch on this, brother.
Yeah.
Does your mom drink beer?
Does my mom drink beer? Yeah, sometimes.
Well, you know, maybe I can get Frank to drink a beer with you. Frank's good conversation, man. He's really good. Hold on one second, brother. I think I'm going to be taking care of this problem.
Do you hear how she's knocking on that door, bro?
Right.
I can't believe this, man. This is embarrassing.
Brother, it's all taken care of. I went in there. I talked to Frank. He's gonna entertain your mom, man.
Nice. Thank you very much. But yeah, as I was saying, like you were saying, man, I think between what they're doing with Hulk Hogan Celebrity Championship Wrestling, I think with the movie The Wrestler coming out, there's like a lot of different things. I think it's actually an exciting time to be a part of the pro wrestling business because for the first time, outside of WWE or TNA, there's different things popping up. Like,
there's two of our brothers right here on Who Slammin' Who that were in that movie, The Wrestler, right? Judas Young.
Yeah, and Danny Inferno. It's funny too, dude. I could have been a part of this, and I kicked my fucking self in the ass. I'm really cool with Alpha, the Wild Samoan, and he's the one that actually trained Mickey Rourke for this movie. Now, the Alpha back in the beginning of this year, I think it was February, or it was like the end of January. It was the beginning of this year sometime. The producer of the movie asked Alpha to get a building in New Jersey to run a show so they can film shit. And me and Alpha used to work together a lot back in like in the late 90s. And Alpha actually called me and asked me if I can get him a building out here to do stuff in. So, and he was gonna have me, and I used to manage up in his promotion up in Pennsylvania too. We used to do a gimmick invasion back then with my group back then was called ISPW, and his was WXW. We would do a like interpromotional thing, and I actually was going to be a manager for the movie, managing Danny and Judas, and I canceled off at the last second because something came up at work or something like that. I couldn't make it, and man, it sucks, dude. And then I had a second opportunity to be a part of it. I ran my 15th anniversary FanSlam Wrestling Fan Festival this past June, and a week before, not even a week, it was like 3-4 days before my convention, I got a phone call from Evan Ginsberg, who was helping with the movie as well, and he wanted me to come there and try out to be one of the announcers for the movie, and I would have been great at that, man. I really think that I would have fucking probably landed a role as an announcer, because I can talk my ass off about the wrestling business just like you could, you know? And the thing was, I was so busy with my convention that I couldn't find the time to go there because it was like on a Thursday and my convention was on a Saturday. And running a convention, man, is fucking so stressful. There's so many little tedious things that you got to do. So I had to actually turn down that opportunity too. So there could have been a chance I could have been a part of it too. And I'm going to kick myself in the ass every fucking time I hear about this movie and when I see it because apparently the movie is getting rave reviews and it's won awards already with film festivals. But, yeah, man, it's cool that Judas and Danny are a part of that.
I'm really happy for those guys. You know, it makes me sick, though, brother, because I'll tell you, it makes me a little envious. And I'll tell you why, man. I don't even hear about this shit until it's already happened.
Yeah.
So it's like, God damn, I'd love to just be in the running for something like that.
Yeah,
you know?
that's one thing. You're way out there in California. A lot of shit goes on up here on the East Coast, a lot of stuff. And I think if you were up here on the East Coast, man, first of all, you'd fucking be working all the time. You'd be booked everywhere. It's just, you know, out there, I don't know how the indies are out there, but I'm sure you only have a select few people to work for out there, whereas up here, there's 1,000 different things going on, you know?
Right. No, it definitely, man, California's kind of a wrestling island.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's like there's a little bit of stuff happening here in California. In fact, I've got a show coming up on November 8th with a company out here called Pro Wrestling Revolution.
Yeah.
And what they've been doing is they've been bringing in a lot of the older lucha guys, and they're drawing really well. And I said this on last show, you know, it just amazes me that none of the main companies are keying in on the fact that you've got a state with the economy of a small country and an illegal alien problem that's making national headlines, and none of the bigger companies or even a startup has jumped on this in California and said, wow, there's a lot of people that are living here that are from Mexico and miss their entertainment back home. I mean, when AAA comes here, brother, they charge $50 a ticket.
I'm sure they sell out, too.
Nosebleeds, brother.
Wow. You know, that's something that Mike Quackenbush actually talked about in his last segment, talking about how he's surprised that no one has started up an American version of Lucha Libre. And honestly, that's a great idea, because there are so many Mexicans and Spanish people that live in the United States now, and someone can cater to that audience, you know?
Exactly right, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the HBO thing. I'm hoping that, you know, I love when these kind of things take off and like the wrestler movie, because it gives the boys more work.
Sure it does.
You know, and I think that's awesome, man, that I can't wait to see the flick. I mean, the opening day, man, I'm there.
Yeah, like, I just think between that, it's like everything's like snowballing at one time. You have Hogan's deal on now. Granted, it's with celebrities trying to be professional wrestlers, but you know what? It's something different, you know? It's still something that has to do with the wrestling business. You have that. You have the new HBO deal coming out. You have the movie The Wrestler coming out. It just opens up the avenue of opportunity for future things in the future. Like, just say, like, let's say Hogan's deal takes off. And this is another thing with the reality concept that they're doing. I think that Tough Enough was way before its time. I think that now reality TV is the hottest thing going. I mean, American Idol is the number one rated show on television. Like, everything now is reality-based as far as television goes. I think that Tough Enough was way before its time. I think that if you did Tough Enough now, maybe you have to, you know, tweak some of the concepts that they had, but I just think reality TV is so big right now that, and if this Hogan deal takes off with the Celebrity Championship Wrestling, it can open up avenues of opportunity for other wrestling reality-based television shows. Like, you ever watch Flavor of Love?
Yes.
Bro,
yeah, I love that show.
Oh, it's so fucking entertaining. How funny would it be if you had a wrestler, no matter who it is, obviously someone that has to have some sort of character and charisma, and you have 20 girls vying to win the love of a professional wrestler. How funny would it be? You ever watch Surreal Life?
Right.
Bro, how funny would it be to have 10 retired wrestlers in a house living together? You have the Iron Sheik.
Bro, let me tell you something, okay? That's gold.
Oh, sure.
You just said that's gold. If
bro,
you have 10 wrestlers living together, right, and the last one there wins the big bonus money or whatever.
Yeah.
And you got like Iron Sheik and George Steele and Roddy Piper and then you
have a Lance Storm in the house too, who's so like by the book, you know, like you gotta have those couple guys in there, like they're totally different than everybody else, you know.
Right. Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's
no,
so many.
Cool. You know, I had this idea, man, and I actually shopped it around a little bit, and I got a few nibbles and stuff on this idea that I had, but I wanted to create a wrestling extreme sport type program. I wanted to present wrestling as an extreme sport, not as a shoot and not as a character-ridden kind of like carny, you know, storyline-based. I didn't want it to be a storyline-based thing. I wanted the storyline to be basically like more along the lines of what's really going on. And my idea was, okay, you take indie workers, and I just wanted to do things like with indie guys. You take two indie workers. You pair up these guys. The guys who, you know, the guy who performs better in the match is the guy that gets paid, not the guy who raises his hand, you know.
Yeah.
And you do it, you know, based on you grade them on different criterium, you know, and you do it as a shoot, because I think that's what's happening with pro wrestling right now. You look at it, that's really what it is. It's an extreme sport. You got all these young guys, and most of them, you look at the size of most of the guys trying to get into the business today, there's tons of small guys. You
yeah.
go in any locker room, you'll be, I'm always impressed when I see somebody over 6'2" that has a body.
Sure.
At least here in California, that's the way it is. Everybody's like, you know, just looks like the kid next door.
Oh, that's a whole other subject that we'll talk about maybe in the future if I ever come back on. It's like how different independent wrestling is now than it used to be. I'm sure we can probably talk at least an hour about that.
Forever.
You know?
But my idea was, you know, that basically, because running an independent promotion, when we ran Pro Wrestling Iron, I was amazed at the storylines that came out of this little indie, where these guys are basically fighting over nothing. You know, I mean, no one's getting paid a ton of money. No one's doing, you know, we don't have TV yet, guys. But already there's this crazy kind of political system going on. It's bizarre. And
yeah.
You got guys talking about, you know, I'm going to shoot on this guy next time. We caught a lot of stuff behind the scenes that I thought was such interesting footage. You know, and I think if you presented pro wrestling, I think pro wrestling's always been afraid to be presented as it really is. And
yeah.
If you did, I think you'd be amazed at how your fan base would grow.
I couldn't agree with you anymore, man.
But hey, brother, I know you got a lot of stuff to do, man. If you do want to follow up on this, brother, we can do that, or I can just have you on another week, or however you want to do it, brother.
Well,
I know you got some things to take care of while you're here in Cali. And you got mom.
Well,
she wants to go to Disneyland.
Well,
whatever.
I see her. I'm looking out your window right now. She's actually chilling, having a beer with Frank. So I got a couple more minutes. If you want to talk a couple more minutes, you know.
All right, cool.
I don't want her to get too fucked up, though. You know, she has to drive me back to the hotel. You know.
Well, you know what? She's safe as long as Frank doesn't start her on the 7-7s.
Yeah, man.
But man, I want you know. There was a subject that we kind of have touched on a couple of times, Tommy. And during our conversation, but I want to really touch on it in depth. You know, I was amazed when I went and I worked for TNA, and I used the term jobber. I was talking to Terry Taylor, and I used that term, like, you know, out in the open.
Yeah.
And Terry kind of got this look on his face like, whoo, don't say that.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to be sued. And Terry kind of went, well, you know, we don't really use that term anymore. And I was all, well, what term do you use? You know, if a guy's not a jobber, then, what's...
Enhancement talent.
Right, and he says enhancement talent. Well, there's another problem with the business, is they're trying to cater to too many guys. Hey, man, I'm tripping because I read emails from guys, like, here in California that are on the indie scene, and they're working in indie promotion, and they're telling me that, you know, I'm not real happy with the way the company's using me. They're treating me like a jobber. So I'm thinking about quitting wrestling, or I'm thinking about jumping to this company, or I'm thinking about moving to a different state, yada, yada. But chances are, if a promoter's using you as a jobber, it's because that's how you look.
Yep.
That's what you represent. You represent a jobber. You have a jobber body, or you have jobber talent, or you have jobber personality. Whatever it is, it's probably something within you that is making that promoter make that decision. So moving all the way over to fucking Florida or to Arizona.
Or even New Jersey, you know.
It's not going to, hey, you know what? There's an old saying, no matter where you go, there you are.
Yeah. I'm so happy that you brought that up because, in my opinion, and I know you too, because we talked about it, and I heard you talk about it in your segment last week. That's something the business is another thing that the business is missing is the jobber. Like back in the day when it was WWF against WCW every Monday Night Nitro, you know it was tooth and nail, man. It was competition, and I could see back then. I can definitely see back then why you had to feature all these marquee matches on your show every week, because you have to try and outdo WCW, or WCW have to try and outdo the WWF. But nowadays, there is no competition, man. And like you said earlier, WWE now has its hardcore fan base that's going to watch the product. They're going to draw anywhere between a 3.1 and a 3.5, regardless if Triple H is wrestling against Edge or if Triple H is wrestling against Snitsky. People are going to watch it no matter what. And this is something that you stressed upon, and I couldn't agree with you anymore. Is that you say you have six people in the match, like you said you had a six-man tag, and they're all stars. Or even if it's a single match with two stars. You know, and like you said, your brain only absorbs 10% of what comes into it. And
right.
If you see Triple H and Edge out there, and, you know, they're having their deal on TV, tooth and nail, blah, 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 boom, 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 you're only going to remember who goes over in the match. And nowadays, there's no competition, and since WWE has their core base of fans anyway, so they got to bring back those jobbers, dude. You have to have those jobbers. You can have one marquee match on Raw every week, whether it be Batista versus Santino Morello, Batista against whoever. You have your main event marquee match, but other than that, man, you have to bring back these jobbers and build these guys up because you know, they're big business, they're house show business.
You know what happened to me when I first broke into pro wrestling, man? I hooked up with Jerry Monty, and right away he started getting me some gigs with WWE as a jobber, okay? And I wrestled like Coco Beware, and I wrestled the Beverly Brothers and a couple other guys. Jerry's training wasn't very good. I ended up hooking up with Rick Thompson, who was a guy that did jobs for Roy Shires back in the day.
All right.
And Rick was very, very good in the ring, but Rick was short. He was like 5'8". He was black, and back in those days, it was really tough to make it, you know, as a black guy. I mean, you know, Rocky Johnson, you know, had that body, and that helped. And Rick never really had that. So Rick looked like a jobber, but his ability-wise, Rick was very good, and especially instruction-wise. And so Ricky, when Ricky offered to train me, you know, I asked him, I said, Rick, you know, I really wish you'd spend more time in the ring with me because I really learn when I'm working with you. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, Mike. He said, let me do my Rick Thompson voice. He said, well, I'll tell you what, Mike. If you wanna do this for a living and you want me to train you, I think you got real ability and I think you got real talent. So here's the deal. I'll train you and I won't charge you jack shit. But you can't do no more WWE jobs. Because if you're just going to be a jobber, then I don't want to waste my time with you. And so I made an agreement. And the thing was, is I showed, by making that decision, I showed that I was more than just a mark. I was becoming a professional wrestler. Yeah. I was making a decision that had to do with my career. That's how I was looking at it. Even at that young age, I didn't realize it at the time because it was a very difficult decision to make. Believe me, brother. I was like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? They're paying me $150 a pop to go in there and job, and I get to stay in a hotel and do the buffet and meet all these superstars that
And not only that, but back then you were a lot younger, too. It's just really cool just to be on TV, too, back then, too, you know?
Brother, just to be on TV, and most of all, my biggest payoff was to be in the fucking locker room, brother.
Sure.
Because I was the fan that was trying to sneak... Me and my buddy, Mad Dog Gary Costa, back in the day, brother, we tried to sneak into the fucking WWE locker room up at Arco Arena. And here's what we did. We stood by security and we watched the people coming up and trying to get in, and everybody was failing. But one bitch came up with some fucking hot dogs and said it was for Tito Santana, right?
Yeah.
So the security guy let her in, right? Well, she was pretty hot. But, you know, we thought, fuck, well, let's give that a shot. So we went and got a couple of hot dogs and a fucking nacho and a beer, right? We had the dude that brought us to the show get a beer. And we brought it up there and we said, yeah, this is for Randy Savage. And the dude let us in, brother. We start walking into the fucking locker room. These two fucking kids, we were like 14 years old. And we're walking through the WWF locker room and we're starting to see the boys pass and shit. And I heard Randy Savage talking. I mean, I was a total mark, brother. I was so excited.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't know how I got off on that story, brother, but
no,
I just had to share
that
with you,
though,
man. Because I'm not afraid to say it, man. This marks for the business.
What happened when you went in the locker room with the beer and the hot dog? Did you give it to someone or no?
We got fucking caught, man. Security came running fucking down the thing. I guess somebody else showed up at the security thing, and they were like, you know, no, you can't let those two fucking kids back here, blah, 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 you know, and they ended up running and chasing us. But we did see the boys.
Yeah.
We got to see Savage and fucking Steamboat, and I remember seeing fucking Coco Beware, which was cool because that was my first match with WWF ever, was with Coco Beware years later.
Hey, you mentioned that. Something I actually never even mentioned before ever on either one of my past radio shows or never in my columns. I never mentioned this, but now that you bring it up, it brings back old memories. When I was a kid, dude, twice, and this is why I feel as though I was destined to be in the wrestling business, is that when I was a kid, dude, one time I was at a show at William Patterson College, back when WWF, back in the day, used to run like the C shows. I'm sure you remember back when they used to do the high school shows and all that shit. I actually caught Lanny Poffo's frisbee when I was a kid. And how about this? I was at Madison Square Garden one time, and it was Ronnie Garvin against Greg Valentine. And I fucking caught Ronnie Garvin's towel, too.
Brother, you want to hear something crazy?
Yeah.
You and Donovan Morgan have something in common.
What's that?
Donovan Morgan also has an autographed fucking, or not an autograph, but an Ronnie Garvin towel that he caught from the fucking crowd. And he's got the footage.
I had the footage too.
No shit.